Well, guys, that was wonderful. So beautiful. Thank you, Dion. It's been a while since you've been here. Did I say your name right? Okay, good. Okay, good. All right. So the reason I mentioned that is that I've been struggling with saying our guest's name. Her name is Alma, not Alma, like a New Yorker would say, but Alma, okay? Alma. So I just wanted to say just a few words about our beautiful guest today. I've been doing these interviews of people that I consider to be reconciling angels. And those are people that are in a very special way working with the forces that seem to be polarized and against one another. I know what Alma does for a living, and she'll tell us more about that. But my impression of Alma was formed at a party. She was actually first a friend of a friend, and we were at this party, and there was somebody there who was drunk and a bit belligerent. And I'm a minister, so my choice of the way to handle her was to go into the kitchen and gossip with the host. Somebody take away the booze. Do you hear what she's saying? But not Alma, our beautiful guest speaker. Alma was so sweet to her and just really, really addressed her beautifully. She was kind, she was loving, she was curious, and yet she was strong. She didn't let this woman step over her boundaries or take advantage of her. You know, there's a Brené Brown saying, I think it's Brené Brown, where she says, don't puff up, don't collapse, be somewhere in between of those two things, and those things will cause greater relationship. So that's all I'm going to say about Alma, because I'm going to have her talk about herself. But I would like, if you guys would do me a favor, let's give her a standing ovation before she even starts and clap as she comes in. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Thanks so much. So. All right. So, Alma, how about that introduction?
I like that puff up and somewhere
in
between.
Don't puff up, don't collapse. Yeah. So, why don't you tell us a little bit about where you're from and what's your background and what you do and all of that?
So, I know some of the people in the
audience.
Yes.
Hi.
Hey, Jess. Hi, Mike.
Yeah.
Well, first, I want to say thank you for inviting me.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
When Bonnie asked me, she first asked me, and then she came to my house to talk with me about what she wanted me to do. And I actually didn't remember the incident. So I think that's an indication of just how much who I am mm-hmm. is how I am.
Yes.
So, and I think that's maybe the underlying theme of what I'm talking about. So you know I just thought that up. So I didn't even know you were going to say those wonderful things.
Yeah.
So let me start by saying I was born and raised in Chicago, Illinois. Oh, I see some Chicagoans here, right?
Yeah.
Hey! Shout out. I attended 12 years of Catholic school. I am a recovering Catholic. Those Catholics, give me a shout out. I went to undergraduate school at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. I did a master's and a PhD at Vanderbilt University. The master's was in human development counseling, and the PhD was in human and organizational development. I am the CEO of Emeritus Consulting Group, and our tagline is enhancing nonprofit success for the public good. My business partner is my daughter, and mm-hmm. she's the president, and I'm the CEO. What's up with that? Well, but she's a lawyer, and she takes care of all the contracts and all of those other things, and I'm out there mostly in the field. She comes out with me every now and then because she knows this work as well. So I would say that I seek to ensure that everyone has an opportunity for life success through education, and that we support that through organizational development, that we don't work necessarily with individuals, although I do work with student success. It's really at the organizational level that it has to happen. Mm-hmm. That the whole organization has to think about what kind of country we want, what kind of neighborhoods do we want, what kind of communities that we want. And most importantly, why we work in mostly in higher education is that's where we have a last chance to prepare students to be good citizens of the world. Mm-hmm. It's our last chance. Mm-hmm. Whether it's at the undergraduate level, master's, graduate school, or master or PhD, that if we don't do it then, if we don't create human beings that are kind, comfortable in their own skin, then I think we've lost an opportunity. Because once you're in the workforce, there's so many forces acting upon us that push us to be in different people, not our necessarily ourselves, that if we don't do it then we have a problem. Mm-hmm. So I'm not gonna say what, unless the systems behave effectively, then I think we have a problem. Mm-hmm. So we focus on diversity, equity, and inclusion. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say a little bit more about equity later, and because people equate equity with equality, and it was two different actions.
Okay. So what inspired you to do that kind of work?
Ooh. Mm-hmm. All of those things you heard me say about
yeah.
my... yeah. Well, I was... I'm the last of 8 children. Mm-hmm. My mother was a good Catholic.
Mm-hmm. <I'm sorry. laughs> Okay. You're among friends. But, okay.
I can tell.
Yeah. Yeah.
But my father was not a Catholic, and he refused to convert. My mother was a convert Catholic, and I don't know if you know about conversion. You know, once you convert from one religion to another, it's you really believe what you. Mm-hmm. But being the last of 8 children, I was picked on a lot. Not by people outside of my house, but the people inside my house. I had 5 brothers. And you know how boys can be, right? Not anybody in the room, right? But boys can be relentless. So instead of, you know, I was a small person, I'm still a small person, so fighting was not an mm-hmm. option. Mm-hmm. So I really worked hard to figure out ways to avoid the conflict, to avoid being picked on, because it didn't feel good. And all of us who've been in conflict know it doesn't feel good, does it? So for me, it was trying to figure out, how do I live in this world peacefully and also help others? Mm-hmm. You know, once I got older, it was like I saw it all over. I saw conflict everywhere. So what do we do to address conflict? Mm-hmm. I have witnessed and been a victim of discrimination, overlooked, but I didn't even know where it was happening mm-hmm. until I got to be older. Mm-hmm. And so when you feel it differently, I mean, my brothers are all black like me, right? Mm-hmm. So it wasn't about race. Part of it was about gender. I wasn't recognizing that as a child. But part of it is just the way we have constructed the world, that some people are put in some boxes and other people are put in these other boxes, mm-hmm. and those other boxes are often very privileged. Mm-hmm. I thought my brothers were privileged.
Uh-huh.
I did.
Uh-huh.
So working to ensure that everyone has an equitable opportunity to succeed is what got me into this work.
Lovely, yeah. Mm-hmm. And yet, when you were coming up in the world, this is a place where I'm throwing you a curve.
No,
we talked about, okay?
There are no curves in all this life.
There are no curves in all this life.
I've seen
okay.
it all.
Good.
Go ahead.
Good. So when you were growing up, there wasn't even an awareness of allowing everybody to succeed, and yet you did succeed. So what is it in you that helped you transcend the odds that seemed like they were against you? Hmm. Because let me just tell you, I mean, Alma said that she has a bachelor's and a PhD, and a hmm. master's and a PhD. You also have a great life. You have a beautiful home, and 2 beautiful dogs.
Bonnie has a cage in her office. You know that, right?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, and a lovely husband,
exactly.
and 2 daughters, right?
Right? No, just one.
Just one daughter. Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. So you have a well. I just gave you another daughter. Be ready.
I'd love another daughter.
<It's> okay. Yeah, but you have a great life. You've carved out a great life for you, and that has not seemed like a possibility for everybody. So what is it about? What is it about you, or was it your circumstances? Was it your personality? What was it?
I am the last of 8 children, and I'm the only one that went beyond high school.
Ah, wow.
The only one.
Yeah.
So what does that say?
I don't know.
Well, to me it says that opportunities are different for mm-hmm. people. So realizing it and recognizing that, It was important for me to ensure that students could go as far as they wanted to go. But I also stayed at home with my mom, who passed when I was 11, until I was time to go to school. So there was 2 years difference. So I was at home with my mother while all these people are marching out the door. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in those, I don't know, I'm not going to say when I was born, but it was in the 50s. In those days, moms didn't necessarily sit and, you know, deal with their babies, especially after you've had seven of them.
Right.
And so I used to beg her, can I go too? Can I go too? Mm-hmm. So education became the anchor for me. As soon as I got in there, I was like, hey, I'm here. I can do this. And so I truly jumped into it with both feet and both hands. Uh-huh. From the day I went, from the first day of first grade until the last day of my PhD. Which I took periods of time off, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Working and then trying to apply what I had learned to the world I was working in. Yeah. And so I think that I am passionate about education. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I'm working too much now to do a lot of development, but I really work hard to try and continue my education as I go on.
Right. So it sounds like what helped you transcend was your passion for education, and I think also some of it was the personality and the coping skills that you developed from dealing with your seven siblings, right?
Indeed.
Yeah. So I'm going to jump to another topic here. We talked a little bit about an underlying common cause of exclusion and bigotry, and I also wanted you to kind of address, is it true that everybody has prejudices?
Everybody has biases. Is how I term it.
Yeah.
One thing or another. Mm-hmm. When you get up in the morning and it's cold day and you got three coats, it's a choice of which one you're going to put on, right? Which one you're going to glom onto. Mm-hmm. So you have that day you got a bias for this coat. The next day you may have a bias about something else. But in life, we tend to, because, you know, if I'm interacting with you, you're not going to change tomorrow. But I have to develop a schema in my head about how I'm going to interact with you depending on how you interact with me. Sometimes people interact with me in a negative way knowing nothing about me. They see me and they run in the other direction from this woman. Maybe it's something they think I'm going to hug them because I'm a hugger, right? I don't think that's it. But
they think you're a hooker? What? Oh,
a hugger.
Oh, a hugger. Oh, my goodness.
That was precious.
That was so precious.
That was precious.
I swear,
it's okay.
It's
okay.
New York thing. Okay. So I'm like, she's not dressed like that. I'm sure she's not wearing. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. I do this all the time.
No. But understand that maybe some people do look at me and think I'm a hooker, depending on how I look. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If I'm wearing a low-cut dress and if they have a vision of people, of black people, being hookers, and maybe it's their first experience. That's bias. That's prejudice. Uh-huh. But it becomes bigotry when people act on it. So I'm in my yard. I used to live in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm in my yard cleaning up because I'm into gardening. And a car rolls by and yells out, "Nigger." They don't know me. They don't know anything about me. I'm living in a nice house, not as nice as the one I'm in,
I know.
But in a nice house. So why would you say that? You think I'm the gardener? Even if I was, who are you to tell me who you think I am? So I think people, how do I say this? They form ideas about who people are based, one, on their interaction with people, so that they have some sense, but the interaction may be very limited, and if that was not good, then it reinforces what they already were brought up mm-hmm. to believe. Mm-hmm. I do believe it begins with how children are taught. So I used to be a dancer, traveling across the country, you know, dancing. Mm-hmm. never hooking.
Thank you. I will never live this down, by the way.
But dancing, and I'm in the, I need something like socks or something. So I go to the closest store, and there's a woman with a small child pushing her cart in the store. And she says to her mama, "There's a nigger." Says that out loud enough for me to hear it. And then she chastises the child. Where does she think that child got that? As if it was osmosis, that child took that in and then related it to me, mm-hmm. not knowing me, not knowing anything about me. Mm-hmm. So rather than get mad, I say to the mother, "That's okay, she doesn't know any better." She doesn't. She's just repeating what she's heard. So it's important that people recognize that what you do is seen by other people, and it frames how they experience the world. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes we forget that people have sensitivities that we don't have the same sensitivities to. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
That if we are going to address the notion of reducing negative biases without understanding folks, mm-hmm. Then we are creating a world that I'm extremely concerned about. And I don't mean just here, I mean across the world, that we're going to be fighting each other and we're going to annihilate each other. Mm-hmm. So that's an added incentive for me to continue to do this work.
Yes.
I'm really old enough to retire, mm-hmm. and I've saved enough money to retire, but I can't stop. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to stop. Do you know what I mean?
Same thing.
And we're doing different things.
Yeah.
But it's because I feel like I've been given a gift of the life that I have.
Yes, sure.
And that all of those things that have happened to me have formed who I am and how I interact with everybody. It doesn't matter who you are or where you came from. It's my responsibility to help people go to a different place. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That was the human development counseling
part of me. Okay, good. Okay, good.
Yes.
Yes. So what I hear from what you're saying that applies to all of us is that we have a responsibility to identify our biases and to find different ways of being with those biases, mm-hmm. to either work on them and to work on also not expressing them as prejudices. Now, with the situation that I described before about the drunken person at the party, I do have a bias about people that are drunk. I'm gonna just watch me like.
That's okay.
Like pretend that it's not a bias, but I actually don't really enjoy being around people that are drunk, and it's okay to have preferences, I would assume, right?
Yeah.
To a certain extent, mm-hmm. but I could have handled that preference in a much kinder way. So you handled it in a kind way. You did. Mm-hmm. You don't remember it, but you did. Okay.
I remember it. I remembered it after you said it.
Oh, okay.
But it's like it doesn't stay in my head.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about that. Like how do we cultivate that kindness? Because we talked about that when we were talking privately about how you cultivated your own. Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, I have been drunk before.
So have I. Yeah,
raise your hand. Can you resonate with me? I try to do it only when I'm in, like when I'm close group of people I know, because they are very forgiving. Because when you know the person, you are forgiving. I did not know this person.
I didn't, and I wasn't. I did know her, and I wasn't forgiving. So anyway, but I forgive her now.
But also, you always start in where you are. Mm-hmm. Have you been there? Have you done that? Has somebody done that? Something similar? Maybe not the same thing, but done something similar. And so then you try and put yourself in that person's shoes and say, how would I like to be treated if I were in that position, if I were that person at that moment? So it took me a bit because it was a birthday party for a dear friend. And I felt like how inappropriate given the circumstances. It was a party. It was a birthday party. And the focus should have been on the person having the party. Mm-hmm. But it was almost the focus was, it's all about me. Mm-hmm. And so I always start by questioning, asking the question, what's up with you today? What's going on with you? Start with a question, not an accusation. I don't beat people when even when people are acting racist toward me. I don't beat them over the head and call them a racist. I'm like, what's going on right now that you've treated me like this? It pushes the person to reflect on what they're doing. Because when you fight, they don't reflect. What's the response? Fight back. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I did. I think I asked her, is there something going on with you today? And I think she may have responded, no, why? I said, well, you know, this party is about Debbie and not about you. So I think she's a little distressed about your behavior.
Oh, yeah.
And so she got it. Somehow she got that, even in her drunkenness, mm-hmm. and decided, okay, it's time that for me to stop. Oh, I didn't even realize. I didn't know I was ruining it for her. I was just having fun.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
I do know, and I need to repeat what you said so I remember it. You know, we've all learned that, right? Do unto others as you would have others do unto you, right? Yeah. And my mom, you know, taught me that when I was a kid, and it doesn't occur to me sometimes in those heated moments that if I was acting wild and crazy and how would I want somebody to treat me? And I wouldn't want them to fight back. So it's that, and then lead from a place not of accusation. That's what I loved about what you said. Move away from accusation into, it sounds like, curiosity.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's lovely.
What's going on?
What's going on?
Because maybe it may be something else completely different.
Yeah, I'm gonna.
She may have just been dumped by her boyfriend. I don't know. Yeah. Or gotten a divorce, whatever. I don't know.
I'm gonna try that. It'll be a first, but I'm gonna try it. Yeah.
Oh.
But then we're talking about.
Well, let me say one more thing. Okay. It really takes practice to do that. Mm-hmm. I do it all the time because I'm old. And I've had lots of time, especially since my master's program, which is where I learned a lot of how to interact with people mm-hmm. in different ways. And to bring them to another place, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But it hasn't been perfected until probably 20 years after that. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But you have to consistently think before you speak.
Yeah.
How is this going to affect the person? Can I move them and myself forward? Not just them, move me, them and myself forward.
Yeah, that's beautiful because, you know, here in this spiritual center, we talk about paradox a lot and the knee-jerk reaction, of course, when someone is coming against you, if someone is expressing verbal violence against you, is to attack back. And the paradox is doing what you just said mm-hmm. of recognizing that they may want to be treated in a kinder way and then coming from curiosity versus accusation. Mm-hmm. That's a beautiful, I'm mm-hmm. adding that to my list of paradoxes. Yeah, it's very much love your enemies, right? The one that we talk about a lot. So when I was speaking with you before, we also talked about a continuum in terms of the future of the world and who we want to, we originally were going to call this message, what kind of nest do you want to be? But I didn't think anybody would understand
But I'm going to say
you're
that.
You're going to say it. Okay, good. Well, you'll understand with a little explanation. So speak on that if you would.
So we've thought, oh, what a great title for this. We have to ask ourselves, what kind of nest, N-E-S-S, that we want to be and to learn how to become that person? So if you think about the three things that we talked about were, on one end, it's harmfulness, harmlessness, and then kindness. And I'm going to work backwards. So harmfulness is in a place where you don't give a darn about anybody but yourself. And let the bodies lie as I walk through, because I'm harmed. I've harmed so many people, or I don't care whether I harm you with who I am, because I'm going to always be who I am. Mm-hmm. Ask yourself, without answering, is that the kind of person I want to be? A harmful person who inflicts harmfulness on many. Mm-hmm. So the middle is sort of harmless. So we're not harmful, but we try and hold ourselves in a place of harmlessness, where we see things and we don't want to inflict, we don't want to carry that further. We just it's a harmless comment. So let me stay out of it. Let me not react. Let me not do anything about it. Mm-hmm. But the kindness space is about reacting, but reacting in ways that move the needle in the positive direction. what I've been talking about in terms of what I do with my life, and that is to see harmfulness and try and address it. See it in a way that you understand the harm it's doing to other people, and it is in that kindness that helps us address the harmfulness we see in the world. We have to come from a kindness space.
Can we have a round of applause for that? I think that is so beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. It is so in alignment with what we teach here, you know, because we're very, it's the temptation is so great to meet harmfulness with harmfulness. And I said to you when we spoke last week, you know, I quote Dr. King a lot, who said that you can't drive out hatred with hatred.
Bingo.
You
know,
bingo, yeah.
Bingo.
He knew what he was talking about there.
Absolutely.
As do you. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Do you have anything else you want to say about that?
Well, just that you always think about yourself in the kindness space, mm-hmm. even when it's really hard. I think it is really hard, I think particularly now. But that if we think about ourselves in a kindness space all the time, we begin to develop a repertoire of questions to ask when you see harm happening and address it in that way. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's much easier to ask the question than to indict.
Mm. Nice.
Because when we react, like beat people over the head and call them a racist and then try and walk away, what does that do? Doesn't move the needle one bit. But if we actually reacted with kindness, which is what I think the question is, mm-hmm. is an understanding that that person has a soul and a body and a place in this world, to move them from point A to point B. I think it's really difficult and it takes real skill to do it, but you don't build the skill by not doing it. Mm. If you never do it, if you don't walk away today and think the next time you hear somebody acting ugly and respond with kindness and questioning, then we will continue down this path of self-destruction.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay, so we're almost complete.
I got one more thing.
Good. Before we stop, I want to tell you that when we're finished doing this public me questioning Alma, after the service at 11, she's going to stay and take questions if you all have questions. So I recommend that if you're interested to stay.
Discussion.
Okay, discussion, yeah.
It's a give and take,
a give
always.
And take. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I love you.
I love you too.
You're so good. I love it. The last question, I think you may have already answered it, but it's how can we take this message and apply it to our lives?
So I'm going to read what I say and then I'm going to talk. Know that we all have biases, mm-hmm. and that we all need to examine ourselves and commit to understanding those biases, whichever ones we have. So I thought I'd tell you a little story.
Yeah.
Unknowing, a bias means that that there are implicit, which we're generally not aware of on the surface, and then there are explicit biases. The racist comment from the person driving past my house is an explicit bias. They don't even know me, how can you have a bias against me? Mm-hmm. But the implicit is the things that we, behaviors and thoughts that we have about ourselves and others that, you know, just get generated just based on our experiences in the world. So it's really this notion of implicit biases that we have to first work on our own before we can really get the courage and the ability to address explicit biases, which are in your face and they're really hard until you get enough skill in order to be able to respond productively. Mm-hmm. And I call it productive confrontation, mm-hmm. the new PC.
The new PC. Like that.
Yeah.
Right.
I think the most important thing that we can do is to make a strong commitment to learning and learning a repertoire of responses when we are faced with adversity, the kind of adversity that I just talked about, where people are being biased toward either you or to someone else. So your intervention is that act of kindness. Mm. When you see someone else being inflicted upon. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so this bias that I had, and that it was an implicit bias, I had an issue with not heavy people, but extremely obese people. I made assumptions about them. I made assumptions that they can't control their eating. And it wasn't on the surface of my brain, but once I had that notion in my head, I continued to have it. My daughter had expressed it to me once, and I had to say to her, "You're right." But then I was a part of a hiring committee, and there were three candidates, and we were interviewing the last of the three to try and make a decision. And there were two African Americans, one male, one female, and a white person in the pool. It was really clear that the African American woman was just incredibly good, but she was also very heavy. Mm-hmm. And if it weren't for other people, actually it was the senior person on the team, uh-huh, who walked into the final conversation and said, "Well, we all know who the best candidate is, right?" And then she said her name. And I was happy that it was her saying it, because I don't know what I would have done if we had to have a conversation about it. Mm-hmm. And that's when I really realized that I had this bias. She was funny, she was smart, and she was the exact right person for that position. We became friends. And as I began to leave where I was, it wasn't even as I was leaving. I just got up enough courage to tell her that story. Wow. It was really hard. And it still brings me to tears, because I was such a bad person then. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Just how could I? How could I even think that? And there was another African-American woman who she and I had the conversation. It was not about her, it was about her fitting in to the space. Yeah, now think about that. So if I can recognize that I can do it to people who I know, who are like me, and rectify it by telling her ultimately, we used to go to this fish place on Fridays. I mean, often. Mm-hmm. So we became really close friends. And it almost took that for me to finally have the courage to say it to her. And she was so kind in her response. She said, "Oh, Alma," just like that. And then the discussion was over. It was all over but the Sheldon. So I tell this story often because I want you to recognize how destructive bias can be. She was the best HR person that institution ever had, and I think to this day still has had. Seriously. So we have to, if we don't begin to overcome our biases, then we do so much damage to individuals, to communities, to the world. And that's the message I want to leave you with. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Alma, before you sit down, please be seated. We have we always give gifts to our speakers.
And, oh my God, and this is a shopping bag.
Yes, there is. And because there's one in here that I don't want you to get the wrong impression. I have a positive bias toward rowdy dogs.
but and she knows, because she was at my house. I was at her both house, of the dogs
and
were all
they
over
were
her.
On
I'm
top
like,
of
stop,
me.
Stop, stop. She goes, no, let them happen.
Yeah,
I'm like,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So this product has worked really well for me with rowdy dogs. It makes a noise that they don't like.
Oh, cool.
And it doesn't only stop barking. It stops jumping up and gnawing on people's hands. So you're set.
So thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for being here. I just love you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Do I need to
You can go sit down there now. You're all set. So again, discussion at 11 o'clock when we're complete. And right now, I'll just move us into prayer. Okay. So, if you would just breathe into all of that beautiful energy that was generated here in this sacred time together. Just breathing with this breath, I thee wed. Just knowing that as we breathe, we move into the infinite knowing and the infinite nature that is beyond differences, that is beyond bias, that presence of spirit that just loves everything, that is not searching for who belongs and who doesn't belong, that who is worthy and who is unworthy. There is this place of absolute reality, this place that we call Rumi's field, the place beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, in this field where the soul lies down in that grass and the world is too full and too beautiful to talk about. We have seen that beauty today in the words of our guest speaker, in her vulnerability, in her honesty. And I trust that it has touched each one of us so that we can yearn to move into a greater place of wholeness, a greater place of recognizing our own personal biases, not hating ourselves for having them, just recognizing that it's part of our human nature, and move into that place where we are able to see them and bless them and love them into wholeness so that it results in taking action, action that is based in kindness, that blesses the others in our lives, that blesses ourselves, and that blesses the entire world. It ripples to bless the entire world. And so I am so grateful for what we have learned this morning, so grateful for the lives that I know have been touched and transformed here in this beautiful spiritual center where we bless all beings, where we aspire to be a center of love that is love, that shares love, and that serves love with our hearts. And so I'm grateful for this spiritual teaching. I'm grateful for Alma. I'm grateful for everyone who has come here today, grateful for the transformation, and I'm so grateful for all paths to God. I bless all of them, churches, synagogues, temples, mosques, ashrams, fundamentalists, atheists, I bless them all. And with a heart that is so filled with blessedness, knowing that everything is a blessing or a blessing in disguise, I say thank you, Spirit, thank you, love, and I release these words into the divine mystery, and together we say, and so it is. I am so blessed, I am so blessed, I am so grateful for all that I have. I am so blessed, I am so blessed, I am so grateful, I am so blessed, I am so blessed, I am so blessed, I am so grateful for all that I have. I am so blessed, I am so grateful, I am so blessed. Trusting, sensing, knowing these beautiful blessings that flow through us, let us engage in the spiritual practice of generosity, preparing our offering with the heart of kindness and the heart of goodness, knowing that the divine moves through us as we give, and that it is in giving that we receive, and it is in receiving that we give. Let us remember that our offering helps to bless this congregation and helps us provide all the wonderful things that we do for one another and for the world, and that we also quite literally ripple out to the world as we give a portion of our income away to organizations that are in need or organizations that inspire us. We breathe in, we breathe out, we prepare our offering, and we know that this is a sacred time, and I invite you in the spirit of this sacredness, of this devotional practice, to please repeat after me. We trust in spirit. Love is the giver and receiver of all that we are. We offer our gifts. They are an outer expression of our inner abundance. Our gifts bless many and return to us multiplied in miraculous ways. And so it is.
Thank you, Alma. Thank you. Let's continue to move through this gift giving, this wonderful song by my dear friend Jennifer Russell called The Gifts. The gifts I choose for you are peace, joy, and understanding. The gifts I choose for the earth are laughter and harmony. And with my heart I wrap these gifts with love, with love. And with my hands I tie a ribbon of compassion. The gifts I choose for you are peace, joy, and understanding. The gifts I choose for the world are friendship, sweet friendship. And with my heart I wrap these gifts with love, with all my love. And with my hands I tie a ribbon of compassion, compassion. Oh, the gifts I choose for you are peace, joy, and understanding. The gifts I choose for the world are friendship, sweet. And peace. That's what it takes. Yes. Thank you. I always have to